Today we are full of anxieties and uncertainties. We have the climate crisis, we have the cost of living, we have conflicts, we have gender-based violence.
It's just like saying to parents, send your child to a casino and then ask them to self-regulate. They can't do that.
If we have someone who went through mental health breakdown due to the work situation, the fact that they take time away and they come back to the same environment won't make any difference.
Because the point is addictive behaviors.
Most people, if you ask them, check your screen time, is much higher than you expect.
Welcome to FEPS Talks, the podcast of the Foundation for European Progressive Studies. My name is François Ballat and I will be your host today. And today we are discussing an issue that affects millions of Europeans. Almost half of Europeans have reported to have mental health challenges in the recent years, and half of them have said that they did not seek out help or treatment. And today we are full of anxieties and uncertainties. We have the climate crisis, we have the cost of living, we have conflicts, we have gender-based violence, we have so many things that create pressure on our shoulders, which means that it's so important to address the question of mental health. And this is why at FEPS we have worked over the past few months on a project called Healthy Minds, Stronger Europe, and we are just publishing today on World Mental Health Day policy recommendation. And today I'm very pleased to welcome three of our key experts in this project. We are here with Aida Bikic from the University of Southern Denmark. She's an associate professor there. And we also have Sarah Boyatuk. She's an assistant professor at the University of Warsaw. And we have Jana Mikalidou, that is an assistant professor at the University of Chemistry and Technology of Prague. So thank you so much for joining today. And starting with you, Aida, first of all, welcome and thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We are obviously witnessing how much digital platforms have more and more presence in our lives, how addictive they can be, the state of anxiety it creates with always notification, ads, and so on. So what do you recommend to do in that front on the impact of the digital new technologies on mental health?
Yeah. Thank you for the invitation. And yeah, I agree with you. What we are witnessing is a digitalization of our societies, and digital platforms are everywhere, at work, at home, in our children's pockets. So it's very pervasive, and it just is taking over our everyday lives. And now we are also in science seeing that there are consequences to this digitalization. In the beginning, we were like very tech optimistic, and especially in some countries like Denmark, it was like embraced, you know, like full on. And the problem we are seeing now is that those digital platforms were not designed with mental health in mind. They are designed to make money and to engage the users. And now we can see it's actually also on the cost of mental health. And there are more and more studies showing that there are issues on many different levels. We see, as you mentioned, the addictive design. We see now that gaming disorder is an official diagnosis in the psychiatric system. We see a rise of eating disorders. We see a rise of self-harm, also promoted through social media. We see that time spent on the social media, like more than two, 3 hours on social media a day, doubles the risk for anxiety and depression. We see that many, especially young people who are the most digitalized in our society, are also the main victims of this technologies. And we also see that never have so many people felt lonely. It affects our attention span. It has become harder to focus, also for adults, for everyone. And we also see a disconnect in social relationships. So it's really on many different levels. There has been like a discussion in the studies, is this like causal? And now we can see in longitudinal studies and also screen time reduction studies that there is also a causal relationship. And a new study of 100,000 young people is showing that like having access to digital platforms early on, before the age of 13, increases the risk of suicidal ideation, of not feeling connected to reality, depression, anxiety, and so on. So there are like many different steps we have to take. And I think like some of the main are that we actually need to regulate those manipulative systems. And we have really to think about, should it be allowed that companies can make money by manipulating and making us addictive to their product. So the first we have many different recommendations, but some of the main is that we need to regulate those manipulative and addictive designs, especially for minors, which we do also like in gambling, and we have been like expecting and telling parents they should, you know, train digital balance in their children, but it's a very unrealistic and unethical expectation. It's just like saying to parents, well, you know, send your child to a casino and then ask them to self-regulate. They can't do that because their brain is still developing and they do not have self-control. I mean, even adults, we do not have it. I mean, the most people, if you ask them, check your screen time, is much higher than you expect. Yes. So it's really, really, some countries have started talking about cognitive integrity being a basic human right. And so what's cognitive integrity? That's actually the right that no one else should be allowed to go in and manipulate our biology, which is happening with these platforms, because they are using different principle, like variable rewards, you know, the colors, the rewards. So it's manipulative in design. And we should really ask ourselves, is this ethical, and how much should we allow this? But in the first step, we really have to ask them also to be safe by design, which they are not. Children are and young people are exposed to many different horrible things, which they are seeing. A Danish study has shown that like 3 out of 4 children have experienced some kind of
distress.
Yeah, so they have been like bullied, or they have been seen some really horrible videos, or approached by adults, and so on. So yeah, and we need to hold the tech companies accountable. We need also, they should, as every other, you know, company, like we are asking pharmaceutical companies and other companies, toy companies, they have to prove that they're product is safe before it's enrolled. But the tech companies just make a product and enroll it to millions of children without testing it. Mm-hmm. And really, really need to regulate this part. And the last thing is that we have to invest in education and in prevention. And we also need to educate like health workers, you know, to see, to ask more systematically what children, adults have experienced online, but we also need to regulate like mental health apps, which AI is driving. People are using ChatGPT, GPT as their personal, you know, psychologist, and this data is being sold for marketing. So it's really, really important to also regulate this part. But also we have to create spaces for, especially for young people, where they can meet, like, without digital distractions. So it's really it's like there are many different steps that we have to take to change the development that we have allowed.
Thank you so much. I think it's so fundamental. The concept of cognitive integrity is really something key, and also from a human rights approach. And you've touched on so many important elements, like also to increase the safety, because the AI chatbots, also you've mentioned, like, it leads to terrible consequences. I think we have all had terrible stories in various countries. But Sarah, you wanted to react to what Aida said.
Yeah, I think it's very important what you've said, because people tend to use ChatGPT to have some sort of space for a discussion with AI to relieve their own minds, but they're not aware and they're not perhaps educated or informed enough what happens with that data, because at the end of the day, is the data, is the product that is then being used and sold and can be used exactly for the same purpose to become, to create the product that is more addictive. I think this is quite important to highlight as well.
Yeah. And it's not only ChatGPT, but it's also, there are also like apps targeting, you know, mental health, like, you know, to get help. But what many people are not aware, I mean, there is no quality testing, and we should have some quality testing, like approval of these apps, because they shouldn't be allowed to sell your most private, you know, thoughts and feelings to a marketing company so they can sell you a product based on your problems. So it's very important.
Do you think something that the EU should do and regulate, or, you know, they do the safety for toys you mentioned? Do you think there should be to be used on the market in the EU?
Yeah, I think really we need to the EU. I mean, it has been like also the first mover in like data protection as well. So we should create laws that protect the citizens from being exploited by the tech companies. I mean, technology can do great things, and we all use it in everyday life, but we shouldn't be the product. I mean, we should use the technology, and that right now technology is using us and also using our children. So it's really important that we regulate that, and safe by design. I mean, that the safety should be a part of design, and not just like, how can I create engagement like many of the platforms are doing. I mean, they don't really care about what they are showing, as long as they are engaging the customers. And what we know, it's fear, negativity, and extreme, you know, content is selling, and that's what's engaging people, and that's why they also do not really want to remove it from their platforms. But it also creates, like, just psychologically seen, like we have like a generation where 14 years old have seen like real murder online and worse things, and so it's really, really important to protect mental health.
Thank you so much, Aida. I hope your call is being heard as well, because the European Commission is put forward the importance of mental health over the past years, but still we don't really know where this is going. The President von der Leyen, I think in 2024, said that we need to step up our work on mental health when she wanted to be elected by the parliament. But since then, we have been more anxiety and uncertainty than concrete answer on mental health. But now turning to Sarah, because we're talking about safety. And when it comes to the workers' environment, safety and healthy working conditions have been always a fundamental part of workers' rights. So we protect people on their construction site. We make sure that people have good facilities in their offices. There is a lot of emphasis on having clean air in buildings and so on. But we have also seen over the past decades an increased number of burnouts and mental well-being issues at work. So how do we make mental health a central component of safety at work? And how do we further empower people through that?
So I think, first of all, we need to start treating mental health as a key component, the same way as we treat health and safety in a physical way. So we do pay attention to what is the environment we work in terms of the quality of air on the construction site. As you said, we make sure that everything is done by the book in terms of physical safety. And yet the mental health is somehow forgotten and left behind. And so this is definitely the start that we should focus, especially that as the economy transitions, we do have more jobs and more technological change in a way that we spend more time in front of the screens. And COVID pandemic has also blurred those boundaries even further. But as adults, we spend most of our time at work. And so the environment that we function in terms of working culture, in terms of what happens with relationships, what happens with the environment and organizational culture, it does affect the way we function. And so it's not only really individual business, it's also the responsibility for the organization and for the policymakers, because it's not only on an individual level to manage this, but it's also economic business, because the recent study showed that 4% of GDP is accounted for mental ill health and situations related to it, whether it's absenteeism or lower performance. So again, it's not only individual, it's also policy and employer related.
Thank you. I think it puts really a central spotlight on our relationship to work and how things are evolving now with all the change that you have highlighted. So maybe if you could have the policymakers in front of you now, what would you ask them to do? What are the key recommendation for you, especially at such European level?
So for sure, we need to look at the situation from the right-based approach. So it's not only, as we mentioned, the physical safety, but the psychological well-being should be also treated as entitlement at work. So should be the responsibilities of employers obliged in terms of early screening or preventative measures to be able to detect or see what is, how are they employees doing, but also to mind to look after employees in a way to, for example, enforce the right to disconnect. Because in the realities where we are surrounded by the phones, most of us have mailbox on our phones, we are surrounded by laptops, it's very easy to just continue working and blur the boundaries where the work ends. But it's not only in terms of the time pressure, but it's also in terms of the workload and tasks management. So even if workers do work online, the appropriate workload should be maintained. But also something that I believe is connected with Aida, what you've said, is the techno stress. And this is the risk of techno stress is something that is actually a risk itself. And this should be definitely addressed on EU policy, because the ICT overload that we experience is something that we need to address in order to manage our well-being. Also, looking at the policies that should apply to workplaces and employers, it is definitely investing into mental health literacy, not only of employers, but also workers, and to adjust the workplaces to the fact that we're all different. We're more aware of neurodiversity. We're more aware of different needs that we have in the way we function, work, study. So workplaces and ICT overload needs to be, or not necessarily overload, but appropriate load of ICT should be adjusted to it, and the fact that we all have different needs and we all work differently. And I guess the two more that I would highlight that are quite important is, first of all, the gender dimension, and the fact that if we talk about mental health and workplace, it's the burden of unpaid care that is something that is still year after year, regardless of the policies, it's still the case. And whether it is to do with sort of intergenerational dimension or unpaid care for women, but also the general attitudes to, you know, stereotypes and working environment. It's something that one would think that so many years after addressing that on any policy level shouldn't be the case anymore that we talk about it, but yet we do. And I guess finally, on a more individual level, is we've called it in our recommendations the balance framework, and each of the letters kind of stands for the actual action. So it's about building awareness and literacy. So back to what I've mentioned about being improving mental health literacy, assessing psychosocial risk, leadership, and labor participation, but also accommodation accessibility for different type of workers. So whether it is to do for with facilitating youth and enrollment and entry to the labor market, which is very important. Navigation and reintegration, so those who already suffered mental health crisis, so they can safely come back to the workplace and they have enough, the employer provides enough facilitation for them to be able to function back. Because if we have someone who went through mental health breakdown due to the work situation, the fact that they take time away and they come back to the same environment won't make any difference. Mm. Confidentiality and cultural and self-care and evaluation for equity, which also obliges employers to monitor not only the physical health and safety, but also mental health and safety of the workers.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sarah. It's so central to have this balance. Because it really defines how we should approach work. You walked us through so many parts, and also thank you also for highlighting the gender dimension, because it's something that we have looked at throughout the work of our expert group on mental health, is to have a gender sensitive, gender responsive approach, and also intersectional, because we know that different gender identities have different relationships to mental health disorders. So very, very important. Now moving to Jana on the third dimension of our work, which is about addiction. And addiction is something that we know. We know people with that with addictions. We may face themselves ourselves. Sorry. And we really know what is the toll that it can have on us. All these elements, also the question of addictions and mental health, builds on existing inequalities, socioeconomic, gender, I've mentioned, and others. But addiction has always been seen through a very repressive and stigmatizing lens nowadays, although, you know, looking at drugs or illegal substances and really pointing the finger. But how do you think we can shift away from this stigmatizing approach and do something more respectful, more inclusive?
Well, we can start by framing addiction differently, because we look at people who face risk addiction. That means addiction which is influencing their lives negatively, influencing their work, their relationships and stuff. The society sees them as junkies, as people who failed to be successful in life. But the reality is, more often than not, some studies say up to 70% of people who suffer from substance use disorder have co-occurring mental health issues. This comes from a lot of times the inaccessibility of mental health care in their place, in their region. People maybe, let's say, self-medicate. People try to escape through substances, through alcohol, through gambling, through digital addictions. They try to escape suffering. That's the baseline. And that's how we need to approach these people. We need to see that not every contact with an addictive product needs to lead to risky addiction. Not every time someone tries a substance, someone tries gambling, it ends in them being on the streets, in them being addicted to heroin and stuff. Most of the time, when people come into contact with some addictive products, they are okay. They just do it from time to time. They do it once a month on weekend. And they're... A lot of the times, most of the times, when you have individuals who are suffering from substance use disorder, there have been some underlying issues with them that led them down this path. So this is maybe the first thing to consider when approaching this issue. Also, I already touched on it a bit. We need to have integrated policies. The EU is talking about drug strategy. As you mentioned, we focus on illegal substances, illicit substances. These are not substances that are chosen by their particular risks, because, for example, alcohol is a very risky substance compared, for example, to cannabis or, I don't know, some psychedelics. And we don't approach alcohol the same as, for example, cannabis. That there is no prohibition of alcohol, and we all know how prohibition of alcohol ended up, for example, in the United States. But we just prohibit them, and we don't support the people who come into contact with these illicit substances through integrated care systems. But focusing only on illicit substances with our drug strategy, we are missing the point, because the point is addictive behaviors. And these behaviors don't come only with illicit substances. They come with alcohol, they come with tobacco, nicotine products, they come with digital products as well, they come with gambling. And so we need to have integrated policy that arrives at the addiction problem through the addiction lens, which means, okay, we have some people who have, let's say, issues in their dopamine system, in their reward system in the brain, and they are trying to escape their suffering through some substance or some product. So I feel like this, let's say, mental health informed or trauma informed system or lens, we can approach this issue more coherently, and we can get better results than we do now.
Thank you so much. There was something that was striking me, is this escape of suffering. I think that's from a philosophical point of view, when we talk about mental health, a really important element. So maybe, what can we do to better prevent addictions to come or to develop themselves, and how do we protect better people?
Oh, well, of course, we start with prevention, and prevention is not saying drugs are bad, okay, because a lot of prevention programs in the, let's say, early 90s, and some of them even now, are trying to scare people from doing substances. This has been proven not to work, of course. We need to have integrative prevention, which teaches life skills. We need to focus on children developing healthy relationships, to have children develop healthy relationship to their free time. We need to have them have experiences that are valuable and that are meaningful for them. Because when we only focus on being prohibitive, being focusing on instilling fear in them, we just make some of them want to try it even more, and we are not providing the rest of them with anything useful. So we really need to focus also on the mental health of children and young adults, because in many countries in the European Union, the mental health care for young people is particularly not accessible. And when we are not addressing the mental health issues in the early years, we then see a lot of risky addictions in the young adults or adults and later in life. So this is a key issue, and this is why mental health and addictions are really interconnected, because if we don't have good mental health care for the young people, then we can expect a lot of problems in the addiction care later.
Aida, you want to react?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point about, you know, that we need to give the children and young people a good start, because basically what many of the addictions do is that it's actually like it's an attempt to regulate emotions, which, and we know that regulating emotions, it's something that is developed in the parent-child relationship in the very early years, which can be interrupted by many different things, mental health, bad mental health of the parents, like parents having to work a lot, not being together with their child, and so on. So basically, like, the, you know, the preventative part starts already, like, when with pregnant women. Having to take, you know, be able to take care of their children and being able to build, which we also know, like, the attachment between the mother and the child and parents and the child is something that is fundamental for everything later in life. And trauma, early childhood trauma leads to bad mental health. And one part of that is addiction, which is an attempt to, yeah, self-regulate and self-medicate.
Yeah, of course. I saw a great study about where we should invest most in preventing mental health issues. And yeah, it starts with the pregnant women, because also the stress that women which are with child go through during the pregnancy can influence the ability of the child that is not born yet to cope normally with the real world. Of course, after that, when the mother is stressed in the first years of the child being alive, then we have also rising stress and also rising risk of developing some mental health issues and addictions. Maybe it's not enough to start when the children are at school. Maybe we should focus also on the families and how the parents are regarding their well-being, because that's where most of the trauma that influences mental health in adults happens.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it's yeah. Creating the foundations of well-being from the earliest stage is how we can really, like, talking about mental health not as an issue, but really as something positive and something that we are all tending towards. We are here at the FEPS podcast, so we are on European policy debates, and we know that if you look really by the book, mental health is of limited scope for action for the EU. However, it still can do something. So I was just wondering if you could, each of you, have one ask to the EU and its institutions. Maybe what would it be like if you could say, okay, will you do one policy, one action? What would that be?
Yeah, I really think that we need to put the people or the citizens first before profits and companies, and we need to protect the customers of digital products as we do in all other areas, as we do in pharmaceutical, as we do, like, in toy industry or food industry or other industries. So we need to have digital products that are safe by design. And right now we are doing, you know, like, age verification and so on to try to limit the damage. My call for action would be that the European Union is mandating that digital platforms need to be safe by design, and that in that way we'll protect not only the children in the European Union, but also we will set a standard for protecting all of the children in the world. Many of them are underprivileged. So yeah, that will be my point.
Thank you. People before profit.
Yes.
So I think in line with that, I will add my mental health in the workplace addition, that indeed people before profit. And so in the EU labor conduct and labor directives, people should be included at first and foremost. So both in terms of psychosocial risks, but also their rights for safe and inclusive workplace.
Thank you. People before profits.
Okay, I will continue with people before profits for the organized crime. So I think we need to approach addictions with an integrated policy. We need to think about addictive behaviors and addictive products as a whole. And also we need to have public health centered strategies that are approaching the addiction issue and that are putting people first. Because when we try to see first that we don't let these people live on the streets, to let these people commit criminal behavior, when this is our focus, the policy looks much different than when we look at it from the point of view of public health. Then we see that risky addictions are only the end of the mental health crisis that we are experiencing.
Thank you again for putting people before profit in that perspective. I think it concludes well our conversation. I want to thank you so much, Sarah, Aida, and Jana, for taking the time and walking us through your areas of expertise, bringing really essential concerns to the table.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Pleasure. And thank you for listening to this podcast. Feel free to read our policy brief and policy recommendation on Healthy Minds and Stronger Europe. And I hope people will continue joining us in putting people before profit. Thank you so much.
Thanks.